émission. It's a pleasure, honor for us to have on the line Dr. Melissa Barber, who I'm going to say, Melissa must have been listening and said, oh my God, Dawood is going to do this interview in English. in Creole, right?
But I was hoping. I didn't brush up on my Creole.
So I met Dr. Melissa Barber in Quadebouquet a couple of months after the earthquake happened, and she was, as I said before, a part of the delegation from IFCO Pastors for Peace, youth from the U.S. who graduated medical school in Cuba. They became doctors in Cuba for free. And when the earthquake happened, they answered Cuba's call to volunteer to help the Haitian people. So we're going to talk a little bit, Melissa, about Dr. Barber, about the time in Haiti. What I want to ask, well, welcome to our program, Héritier Papa de Saline. How are you doing, Melissa?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for the pleasure and the honor of being on your show to speak about my experiences in
Melissa, when you heard the call from Cuba and you saw the earthquake, what happened? I mean, how did the decision come for you to go to Haiti?
For me, it was no question. I think a considerable part of our training in Cuba has always been the idea of just internationalism and the fact that you help your fellow man and your fellow brother, no matter where that need is, especially if you're available to the call. And so I just remember always, as studying medicine in Cuba, I've always wanted to do a mission in Haiti. And the funny thing is that everybody, well, when are you going to go? And I had no idea when I was going to go to Haiti. But it just seemed like the right thing when, after the earthquake happened, we just all were sitting around like, I have this training and what can I do to help? And so, you know, in that need and seeing how so many people even on the media stations were saying, you know, you're sending these supplies, but we don't have the medical resources to actually come and, you know, give or administer the medicines that you're sending down or the help to treat some of the injuries that were incurred at the because of the earthquake. And I just knew that that was something that, you know, I don't know, fate, God calling me to actually be a part of. And so there was no question for me to actually pick up everything and to go to Haiti to help and do my fellow duty, not just as a physician, but as a fellow brother or sister to the nation of Haiti and give my support in any way that I could.
Melissa, you guys got there a couple of months after the earthquake. You spent a month in Haiti, much of it in Quadebouquet, in an open park space, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the experience. What kind of cases and what hit you? What do you think you learned about Haiti, the Haitian people, the job in that time?
I just, for me, it was such a wonderful experience because, one, we were actually providing health care to over 500 different patients per day. We had a line starting at 5 o'clock in the morning that would circle around the whole park and then go down the block for some duration just to actually see doctors. So that just spoke of the need there was to have an established healthcare infrastructure there for the many patients. I think what overwhelmed my heart was to see how patients had traveled so long and so far just to see a physician. We saw patients that had things that you only read about in textbooks. And so, you know, that, you know, in itself was just an experience to actually learn, like, you will never see a case like this probably anywhere else or this is probably the first time that you're going to see this type of cancer or this type of ailment, or, you know, it was my first time actually seeing children suffer from, you know, dehydration and, you know, malnutrition in such a way that I had never seen before. You know, and for me, like some of the diseases that were just very preventable, like dehydration and like, you know, chronic diarrhea cases, you don't necessarily see those many places, especially here where we live in the city. You might see several cases of that, but it's very, very rare to see it. So when you see something like that up close and personal, not only does it, you know, strike your heart as, oh my God, I'm seeing this, but it's just like, why is this happening and why does this exist? So there's so many things going through your mind at the same time, and you're like, how can I help? Like, we would, you know, sit there and come up and pool our resources. We had one case that particularly stood out to me was a gentleman who had lost his wife in the earthquake. And his wife had just had a newborn baby, and he was struggling because he didn't know what to do to take care of the child. So, you know, we were trying to, you know, gather our resources and get notes together and do things and show him, you know, what to do with this newborn baby that he had, and showing him how to take care of her the way that, you know, the mom would have, you know, done so if she was present. So there was, you know, just so many things that just stood out to me and struck my heart. And, you know, of course you want to do more, and like, what else can I do? What else is there to do? And I think we went every day with this focused mind on what can we do to help whoever we saw that particular day, and try to create a situation where all of the patients that we were seeing were feeling loved, were feeling like they had the best of care, and that they were in the best hands possible.
We're now 5 years after Melissa, and I can tell you that the healthcare system in Haiti has, you know, we cannot say it's in the same situation, because we know that Cuba and Venezuela, they've set up these care centers at different departments of the country. But if you look at the system in general, it's not much better. I mean, and the people who were the victims, the aid, this money, all of this money that was supposed to go and help them, and people are looking, they're seeing that, you know, this money, like more than half of it just stayed in the United States, stayed in these other countries. I mean, what are your thoughts, like, 5 years later?
Well, I really think that Cuba has done a great job in actually helping to, you know, put a dent somewhat in the healthcare infrastructure in terms of the creation of something that may be sustainable. I think, however, there's always work that still needs to be done. I think for the first time, me just being in healthcare, you see, you know, the systematic racism and inequalities in health that begin to take place in systems like our own. And, you know, it really struck me that, for example, like the needs and how they were pouring in, and people would need this, but how you would see people lined up at, like, for example, the embassy, the American embassy, waiting for a bag of rice. You know, and it's like, wait a minute, all of these people are donating millions of dollars to help these people get food, get resources, get all of this stuff.
Billions, Melissa, not millions,
right.
Billions.
Billions, right. Billions, so you're billions of dollars, and you're like, okay, and out of that billions of dollars, people are only getting a 100-pound bag of rice. And then it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't an effective way of distributing the resources that was there. Because, you know, if you really wanted to make that type of an impact, it was like, okay, why don't you set up between the regions of where this hurricane was hit hardest, and go to these 10 cities and begin to, you know, start infrastructure so that you not only are, you know, building up the environment and the structural environment, but that you're making sure that these people had food and resources. When you graciously took us to Leogan, it was a month after, you know, considerable time after the earthquake, and there still weren't bodies that were dug up. You know, there was still so much stuff in ruin. And it was like, well, how come, you know, we have billions of dollars pouring into this country and the majority of that money is going to administrative costs and I'm not even reaching the people who really need the help? So, you know, you see that, and of course it just, it makes you angry and it makes you frustrated, and you wonder why there are not more effective ways in which people could have sat down and said this would have been a more effective way and an efficient way of distributing the money, distributing the resources, for people to really get the help that they needed.
I have to tell you, in the community here, we've basically concluded that, you know, this was not a mistake. This was not like something that somebody didn't do right. That when you look at the scale of it, that it's impossible that this was not the plan all along, basically. The continuing plunder, the continuing, you know, denial of humanity of black people, of Haitians who dared to stand up to these people, you know, by doing the revolution there. But we're going to end, but I want you to say something about the work that you do at IFCO, Pastors for Peace. And also, the people listening should know that Dr. Barber, Melissa Barber, that we're talking to, last April was chosen as one of the 25 influential women of 2014 for the Bronx. That means if you, in all of the Bronx, you know, if you can get 25, you know, women who are making and shaking stuff up, she's one of them. Go ahead.
Well, I would like to say that first I am the program coordinator for the Latin American School of Medicine in Havana, Cuba. So IFCO, our office, facilitates a free medical school scholarship program for students of color who have U.S. citizenship to go and study in Cuba for 7 years and get medical training to become physicians and then go back into their communities and provide support for underserved communities throughout the U.S. So that's my the one main job. But, of course, when you work in nonprofit, you have many hats. So that's one of the main ones that I do at IFCO.
Like working with a hammer and nail, something?
Yeah, hammer and nails to fix stuff so that it wouldn't fall on the floor because of wiring. And IT tech when you need to be that and do that. And coming up with program, you know, ideas for new programs that we want to actually implement for social change and social justice. So among those many hats, I'm doing that main thing of providing scholarships and getting minorities of youth into medical school, which is, you know, a dream come true for our communities to have people and doctors who are passionate and caring and who look like us that can serve us the way we need to be served.
And the phone number, if there's anyone listening who has a child that they think should participate or who is a student that would like to study medicine for free in Cuba.
Our phone number is 1212-926-5757. We also direct people to our website, which is www.isconews.org. So again, that's www.isconews.org. And on the website, we have a medical school tab which explains all of the requirements necessary for students wanting to apply to the program. And we welcome you all to have a look at the page. If you're, you know, have the qualifications and you want to go to medical school in Cuba, we ask that you request an application on our page, and we will definitely get that to you as soon as possible.
So thank you very much, Melissa, Dr. Barber, and I hope that that March trip to Haiti does materialize. Eh?
I hope so, too. I hope so, too.
All right. Take care. Be well.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
C'est ça. Nous sommes fait un petit parler avec Dr. Melissa Barber et Dr. Melissa.